Thanks for listening to this Word in Your Ear podcast. If you'd like to get early access to all our productions ad-free, priority booking for our live events, and to take part in our weekly quiz, go to patreon.com/wordinyourear for more details.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Word down your way. You're such a lovely audience.
Now, on my way down the escalator in the London Underground yesterday, I passed a slightly, frankly, disturbing poster featuring a familiar face wearing a woolly hat and a fisherman's waterproof with puzzled-looking seagulls perched on either shoulder. Yes. It's, of course, advertising the fact that Richard Thompson has a new album called Ship to Shore coming out and is headed back to the UK for a tour, which begins on May the 25th in Cambridge, finishes on June the 8th with a show at the Albert Hall. And so we're delighted to say we're joined by Richard Thompson here from his home in New Jersey. How are you doing, Richard?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Nice to see you, nice to talk to you.
Nice to see you. And you were just mentioning the eclipse. This is exciting because we're recording this on the day that the eclipse is about to happen in a few hours' time for you on the East Coast.
Yeah, that's true. We're looking for a suitable high point to observe, which should be the skies are clear, I'm glad to say, so we should be in luck. I saw an eclipse, I think, when I was a kid, in London, so it's been a while.
Yes. Well, they're not supposed to be too often, are they?
It's very boring if they're every hour and a half.
So you've actually begun this tour. You started playing in the United States.
Well, this is a kind of a quasi experience. This is solo dates around the northeast of the United States, basically stuff that's drivable from where I'm based here. And this is solo. So the band stuff starts rolling in the UK.
I see. So you're on your own at the moment, but with a band,
As you mentioned, from the extraordinarily disturbing poster on the Underground, I think they're targeting the Northern Line for some reason. I don't know why.
I saw in the Piccadilly and the Victoria. Don't worry.
Okay, that's good. Okay, I'm glad the demographic is wider than than I was hearing. That's a good thing. So that starts in May, June, and then we're back in the US with the band in October, November. So a proper tour for a proper record.
Right.
Just on proper.
we tend to start these things by asking people if they can remember the first gig they ever went to, really.
The first live show of any kind.
Live entertainment, actually. This can include panto or whatever, you know.
Okay, first live show of any kind. We're pantomime's in there somewhere. I remember seeing Arthur Askey in panto.
Yes. Very good.
Big-hearted Arthur.
Yes, as Charlie's aunt. Couldn't tell you what the date it was. My parents took me to one of those sort of gala family evenings at the Albert Hall. Again, probably I was about 5, 6, I don't remember. You know, where they do the 1812 overture with real canon.
Very good.
Tchaikovsky piano concerto number one. John Ogden playing piano. It's fantastic. You know, the Hebrew chorus, blah, blah, blah. You know, family favorites. But it's a thing. It gets you started. Then I saw Segovia, probably I was about 10. At the Festival Hall. He was 70 then. I think he played till he was 90. Extraordinary experience. That was pretty good.
So had you taken up the guitar at that point, or was it? Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. That was probably the first year I was playing classical guitar anyway. I'd sort of started on the sort of Shadows trail, the rock and roll trail, a little bit before that. But that was nice to have my sort of classical side reinforced by seeing somebody unbelievably important in the history of classical guitar. Rock and roll wise, I think 63-ish, I think 63 or 64, I went with my sister's boyfriend, my big sister's boyfriend, and I think Hugh Cornwell as well, who was my schoolmate at the time. And we saw Chuck Berry at the Finsbury Park Astoria. On a bill with Carl Perkins.
I saw that tour.
You saw that tour, okay. Didn't you?
So who else was on it? I can't remember. Because I saw two tours back to back. I saw Chuck a year later. Yep. So he got out of prison in 63, and he's probably figuring my reputation's shot in America, but Europe loves me. I'll go over there and earn lots of money, which he probably did. So that first tour. Was he back by the was it the Moody Blues or something?
Blues later. Nashville Teens probably. Yeah,
no, Nashville Teens was on that tour.
The Animals probably.
I think the Animals might have been on the one the year later.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, I do get confused between those two.
What do you remember of Chuck Berry?
Chuck Berry, the first tour, the 64 tour, he was fantastic. You know, he played for like 20 minutes.
Yes.
Usual stuff. But he was absolutely great. You know, he still had the big blonde Gibson Switchmaster, which was always the best sound he ever got out of a guitar. But playing through a Gibson Atlas amp, which I thought was very exotic at the time. Sorry for the nerdy details.
So you did that. Did you go along with the notebook pretty much to write down the equipment?
Pretty much, yeah. He was absolutely great. You know, he was in some ways at the height of his powers, if you want to call it that, or his attention span anyway. the next year, it wasn't quite so good. Oh, by the way, Carl Perkins was fantastic as well. He was absolutely great.
Absolutely.
The next year, he declined slightly. I might have seen him another half dozen times during his career, and it got kind of sloppier and couldn't care less, you know, it went through progressive degrees. But by the time it came to My Ding-a-Ling, it was kind of all over, you know, really, in many ways.
But you did lots of Shadows songs in as good bands and stuff. So did you see the Shadows at some stage? I guess you must have done.
I think I did. Yeah, I think I saw Cliff in the Shadows somewhere, but I can't remember where that was. And it was a later incarnation. It wasn't the original. I'd love to have seen the original with Jet Harris and Tony Meehan.
Right.
I just love the sound of those records still. I mean, they just sound fantastic. You know, the bass sound, Jet Harris's bass sound, it's to die for. And it's like, you know, EMI, you know, the mic's, you know, 5 feet from the bass cabinet. You know, it's just, but everything sounds great. The drums sound great. The guitar sounds great. I mean, you know.
There's nothing like them, is there really, in pop music, really? There's nothing quite like the Shadows.
No, there's nothing as good, and there's nothing as well recorded. You know, you listen to... you know, other instrumental bands of the time. Apart from something like Booker T and the MGs, you know, nothing quite lives up to that quality.
Yeah.
Anyway, so then, chronologically moving along. So I think probably 65, I start going to the Marquee Club. And there's just a feast of possibilities there. I mean, you got The Who on Tuesdays, just absolutely incredible. Yardbirds on Friday. You know, I think it starts with Eric, and then it's Jeff Beck, and then it's Jimmy Page. You know, fantastic stuff. The Nice, I think, was Thursdays or some Thursdays. Keith Emerson, Spencer Davis Group with Stevie Winwood. He was like my age or a year older. Yeah. I could never figure out how he got out of school. It was fantastic.
Well, Spencer Davis was his teacher, wasn't he?
Oh, that's right. That's how he got
probably
out of school.
How he got out of school.
Little math lessons.
They both bucked off.
Poor kid. Yeah. So that's fantastic. Go Far the T-Bones, etc.
And this is when I think you wrote about this in your autobiography. That your parents were living in Whetstone, but they were somewhere like that.
Yeah,
you used to walk home pretty much, didn't you?
Well, you had two choices. Yeah, you could stay for one set and get the last bus or the last train. The temptation was always to see both sets. knowing I'd have to walk home, which was 10 miles.
God.
On a school night, you know, sometimes that was a bit silly, you know. So I'd be up at 7 for school, getting in at 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning. My grades were slipping, shall we say.
Yeah. So when was the first time you were on stage? Can you remember that?
Yeah. Yes, that was... I'm haunted by that that memory. So that was St. Aloysius School up in Highgate.
Oh,
you see the green dome of,
yes,
the, of
yes,
the church.
Yes, yes, yes.
And the school was just along from the church there. And it's a school dance. At that point, you know, I've been playing with these other St. Aloysius kids. You know, one of them was my neighbour. And from being a kind of a shadowsy sort of... imitation band, you know, our four piece, you know, suddenly we thought, well, oh my God, the Beatles have come along. We need some singers. So we recruited quite kind of three singers from St. Aloysius School. So we're kind of an unwieldy seven piece for some reason. And we're opening at St. Aloysius School Dance. And, you know, the old pennies, like the big pennies.
Yeah.
If one of those hit you, it actually hurt. And we were pelted, you know, as the opening act. I think we were under amplified. We were basically rubbish. the rhythm guitar player, my friend Malcolm, had a red guitar with a white fingerboard. And I looked over at one point, and the whole guitar had turned red. And I thought, well, what's going on? I thought we had a white pickguard. And it was blood, like a penny had hit him on the hand. And he was still smiling bravely and having a great time.
That's amazing.
In spite of the fact
what
that...
What were you playing? What songs were you playing?
We were doing, you know, like Twist and Shout. Twist we were just on Beatles covers and stuff. You know, it was very poor, very poor. But, you know, we were pelted. Not the last time I was pelted on stage.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I did a gig somewhere, probably about a year after that, and I never throw in chairs at the stage, which is... You can't play through that.
Why? What had you done that?
They didn't like something. They didn't like the repertoire or something, you know. when that happens, you really have to get off stage. You can't just brave it out. You know? Right. And, you know, occasional fights in the audience, you know, that's another hazard sometimes.
So what have you learned? Is there anything you've learned about crowd control in a long career as a professional musician, about things that work in terms of communicating with a difficult crowd?
I've been lucky for most of my so-called career in that the audience is largely on my side. When you do an opening spot, though, for somebody else, you know, your manager or your agent will say, to further your career, we have to reach a new audience. And so why don't you open for so-and-so? You know, why don't you open for, you know, Whitesnake or something totally inappropriate. Or even a sympathetic audience. Like I did a lot of opening slots for Bonnie Raitt, did a lot for Crowded House. But they'll still ignore you and they'll still be walking in when you go on. You know, it's the lot of the opening act. So I decided that I just attack the audience in those situations. And I thought, well, you know, who are the loudest people I know? Well, I thought there's Pat Donaldson, you know, the bass player. You know, Pat's famous for, you know, sort of taking over a restaurant, really, you know, like the top of his voice and ordering three lobsters and, you know. And there's Danny Thompson, you know, another sort of loud person in a social situation. So I thought, well, I'm going to borrow the personae of these two people. And I'm just going to shout at the audience. I'm going to berate the audience and at least get their attention, even if they don't like me. And it kind of worked. So that was my approach to being ignored. But, I mean, I haven't had a lot of hostility in the last sort of 45, 50 years.
But I think I read you saying in an interview once that on stage, even in front of your own people, your own, you know, audience, to put it that way, you've got to be a slightly exaggerated version of yourself, haven't you?
You have to be somebody else. I mean, famously, you can go on stage and not be yourself. And for a lot of people, that's a great escape, you know, from who they are. I think that can work pretty well. But in some ways, I regret not being the silent, tortured genius, you know, the kind of the Nick Drake figure, you know, who never says anything on stage, and people just think, my God, he's so incredible. Oh, he's so poetic. Oh, he's so wonderful. You know, people will read a lot into
silence.
Yes, it's your lack of communication. You know, they'll think, well, this is fabulous. You know, gosh, wow.
So much less effort would be involved, wouldn't it? You just have to sit there just being enigmatic and silent.
You know? Exactly. So you must have seen Nick Drake in one of his very few live performances.
I think I saw him once or twice at the most, yeah.
Did he speak to the audience at all?
Sorry?
Did he speak to the audience at all?
I don't remember ever seeing him speak to the audience. That might have been beyond his skill set. he didn't really, you know, he didn't speak to a lot of people, not just an audience. I mean, you know, socially, he wasn't exactly the life and soul of the party, you could say. But I think maybe I saw him twice. He opened for Fairport, I think, on those two occasions. Ashley kind of discovered him. At the Roundhouse, you know, it was like an all-night charity thing, and Nick got up and sang, and I don't know what the audience reaction was then, probably just stoned. And Ashley thought, oh, this guy's got something, and he recommended him to Joe Boyd.
Were there people that you ever saw on stage who you borrowed from in terms of stagecraft, if that's the word?
That's a good point. Yeah, you know, so someone I always thought was amazing on stage was Ian Anderson, Jethro Tull, who just went out there and just killed it. I thought it was an incredible performer, just an amazing performer. And Captain Beefheart, I thought, was an amazing performer. In a different way, you know, just I think it's something about just dominating the audience. Just
they're both kind of ringmaster figures, aren't they?
You know? Exactly, yeah.
Commanding attention.
Yeah, you go out and you tell the audience who's the boss, basically.
Yeah.
And it's hard to do. You know, it takes a lot of chutzpah, you know, to go out there and do that. I'm not sure I can always carry that one off.
Right. So this tour, on the poster that I was referring to earlier, I think it says very special guests. Are you in a position to tell us anything about the very special guests or the shape of the show or what it's going to be?
The very special guests are going to be at the Albert Hall. I think at the other shows, it's going to be more my usual band and the usual goings on with that. At the Albert Hall, we do have very special guests. I have to get clearance before I can name them. You know, I have to know that you know, that they're not doing other shows in the area, so they can't be announced, all that kind of stuff. You know,
right.
So it's kind of legal stuff.
What's the breadth of what you're playing?
No.
Are you playing stuff from very, very early on?
You know, I try to do a mixture. I know there are fans out there who have stuck with me for better, for worse, frequently for worse, for the last, you know, 50 years, 50 years plus now. And they deserve something. You know, they deserve to hear something from Fairport, maybe something off of Henry the Human Fly, you know, from 1971. And then I think, well, you know, people who joined in the 80s, the 90s, you know, they deserve something as well. So I really tried to grab something from each era, each decade, and play some new stuff. I mean, what I'd like to do is just say, here's the new album. We're going to play that, and thank you and good night. But there has to be a balance in there. So
David and I frequently mention Henry the Human Flyer because of its sleeve note. How did it start again, Dave? Is it Bugger Said God?
Bugger Said God is raining again.
Yeah.
Poetry.
Fabulous.
Well, you know, a bit more like pottery than poetry, but there you go. That's
I read it regularly, Richard. Yeah. All these years later, I read it. It still makes me smile.
Well, that says a lot about you, unfortunately. You know.
And when I saw the poster of you on the tube, you know, in your fisherman's gear, I thought, well, this is a man who started his solo career dressed as a fly on the cover. So it's not surprising at all, is it, really?
I think it's progress from a fly to a fisherman. I think I'm doing quite well. You know, next album I might be dressed as an accountant or something, and it's something that actually makes money.
I'm looking at your fuller itinerary for later in the year. You're doing a songwriting and guitar camp. That's in the United States. Have you done this before, presumably?
Oh, yeah. I think we're up to year 12 now.
Oh, right.
And, it involves my family, which is great. My grandson and two of my boys, Teddy and Jack, and my grandson, Zach. Kind of the four of us now run the camp. It's up in the Catskill Mountains in one of those old bushed belt resorts. Yes. But it's beautiful. It's the most beautiful spot. It's, the weather's great. It's just a lovely place, you know. And we regularly sell out. So it's 100 plus people. We get great teachers like Sean Colvin sometimes. We get guitarist players like Martin Simpson, you know. And the people who come have formed a kind of community, you know, that attendees past and present are online now with each other. It's 200 people who regularly communicate and keep in touch. It's a great experience. It's a great experience for me. You know, I can waffle on about music in one form or another.
Is songwriting involved then?
It's a guitar.
You encourage people to write songs.
It's a guitar and songwriting camp, so people can come for one or the other or both. And they usually come for both.
What's your advice for people who are trying to write songs when you start?
I usually say, you know, it's a crowded field, you know, so don't bother. That would be my first advice. But if you insist, here's some choices, you know. And I don't think you say, you need this rhyme scheme, you know, you need to do this. It's not that specific, I think, most of the time. A lot of the songwriting teachers we have will generally talk about their own work and demonstrate in that way how they go about their process. And I try to teach my process. And also, I think to teach more of a philosophy than an actual technique, because there are many ways to write songs, there's many ways to write poetry, write a novel, you know, paint a picture. So I think you teach a kind of an approach, a kind of a philosophy, an overview. And that's about the best you can do, really. And the other nice thing about the camp is you're probably going to learn as much from your fellow attendees.
Yes, I'm sure.
You know, as you are from the teachers. So it's a great experience, and I hope we can keep it rolling as long as possible. It's fun. Yeah.
The other thing on your schedule is you're on the Jewels of the Adriatic cruise later in the year. Have you done that before? Is that a new thing?
That's a new thing. I've done cruises, you know, in the Caribbean. Think of Kayama, which is a great like a singer-songwriter cruise.
Oh, right.
That's like 3,000 people. That's a lot of people. I've done river cruises down the Rhine and the Danube, which is one of my favorite things to do, where you've got like 120 people. But that's a beautiful experience. But this is the first time that we've done this Adriatic cruise that's out of Venice. It's the biggest sailing ship in the world, I think I'm right in saying. You know, it's like a five-masted ship. This massive sailing ship.
Oh my goodness.
It's a real old school schooner.
It's old school, and you know, I don't have names for the number, the sails. You know, like when you go up to six, Right. Square rig sails. I'm not sure what the names are. It's like beyond Moonraker, you know, it's beyond Top Gallant. God knows what you call them. Anyway, and that's going to be with Fairport. So it's me and Fairport, and it's going to be great. It's going to be fantastic. And it kind of hops around the Adriatic, which at that time of year should be fairly calm. We just go to former Yugoslavia, really, but basically to Croatia. To
playing in rough sea with Albania. Have you ever played in rough sea?
Roughish, you know. I mentioned the Kiamo cruise and the theatre there, the big theatre, is right at the front of the boat, and so you can get a bit of sway, you know. Even in a fairly calm sea, it'll move around a little bit. And they've now secured the PA columns a bit better, but the PA columns used to kind of roll from side to side. And if I had the band on that boat and I was playing electric, it was hazardous to try and step on a pedal because your foot would raise with the intention of hitting the fuzz pedal, and you'd hit the tremolo pedal, you just like miss completely. By the time your foot came down, the ship had moved. all these things are great fun.
Well, look, Richard, very nice to talk to you. You're looking forward to the talk, looking forward to being back in the UK.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Of the things I do, that's my favourite thing to do is to just get up in front of an audience and play music and feel that you're getting something across to people, you know, that you're sharing music. It's lovely.
This podcast was brought to you by The Word.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas. I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.